Surveys about human fears consistently put public speaking at the top. And that's above death, by the way. Even harder than speaking in front of a crowd is taking the stage to publicly admit defeat. We heard plenty of that this week from the country's losing political candidates, who after months of campaigning had to gracefully admit loss in front of their disappointed supporters.
You've got no business in politics unless you respect the judgment of the people. If you run for office, you've got to be able to take it either way. I accept the decision of the voters, and I have already offered my sincerest congratulations and good wishes to Senator Shaheen.
U.S. Senate hopeful Scott Brown there conceding defeat to Senator Jeanne Shaheen in Tuesday's midterm elections. So what makes a winning concession speech, if we may ask? Well, we can when talking to in-house presidential historian Brady Carlson. We took the opportunity when speaking with Brady for our Election Day show on winners and losers. You may know him as NHPR's host of All Things Considered, but he's also hard at work on a forthcoming book called Dead Presidents, An American Adventure. My conversation with Brady began with perhaps the most quoted sore loser speech in American political history.
I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Richard Nixon there, and who would be go on to be kicked around and do some kicking himself for some time. So what's the story there, Brady? What was he talking about?
Well, he was talking to the press, which, of course, is ironic because we all remember the warm feelings that the press and Nixon had for each other. This particular speech was in 1962. Nixon had lost the presidential race in 1960. 2 years later, he ran for governor of California, and he lost that race to the incumbent Edmund Pat Brown, whose son is now governor of California. And as he congratulates Brown, he starts noting all of the things that he's proud of in doing in the race. And as he notes each of these things, he says, now, of course, you didn't report that, and you didn't report that, and you didn't report that. So he's turning his concession speech into kind of an indictment of the media and the way it was covering his campaign, which he thought was highly unfair. So he said after these two big losses, he was politically finished, and he said the reporters are going to miss me when I'm gone.
He said it was his last press conference ever. So it's a memorable concession speech.
Highly.
Any standout concession speeches, either historical or contemporary?
There was a famous concession speech actually in New Hampshire during our presidential primary in 1988. This was a Republican contest between Vice President George H.W. Bush and Kansas Senator Bob Dole. Bush won that race, and it was very contentious. And when asked if he had anything to say to Bush about the vote, Dole growled, yeah, tell him to stop lying about my record.
But couldn't we make the argument, Brady, that that is somehow more honest? You know, I mean, we think about the campaign season, all these slings and arrows and barbs and accusations and animosity exchanged between the candidates.
And then all of a sudden they're being nice to each other.
Pling! You know, I called my honorable opponent and, you know, offered my congratulations, you know, then they're all gracious about it.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the fact that for the people who aren't winners in these races, this is their last chance to speak to their prospective constituents. And in most cases, you want to put a good face on that, especially if you're thinking 2 or 4 years down the road that you might be back. You don't want to leave people with the image that that then Vice President Nixon left in 1962, where it was a very, you know, he sounded bitter and he sounded upset and he sounded a little too angry for people's tastes. You basically don't want to give people an excuse to not vote for you or not like you somewhere else down the road. And even in Nixon's case, it worked out in the end. After 6 years, he wound up running again and as the new Nixon and ended up being president.
Okay, so let's hear a sore loser. This is former New Jersey gubernatorial candidate Barbara Buono. She lost in that race to Governor Chris Christie, who, let's say, outpaced her by many, many points even going into the race.
The Democratic political bosses, some elected and some not, made a deal with this governor, despite him representing everything they're supposed to be against. They didn't do it to help the state. They did it out of a desire to help themselves politically and financially.
Okay, so that's not such a great concession speech. She's blaming her own party for her loss. How about memorable, good, Heartwarming, gracious concession speeches.
Sometimes these concession speeches really can convince you that even in the nastiest of political campaigns, sometimes there's still something good going on in the American political system. I mean, most recently, there was the example of 2008 when John McCain won a lot of praise for his concession speech in the presidential race. McCain pointed out that this was a historic election, that Barack Obama, an African-American, was now going to be president of the United States. And he was thinking just about a century before that, the incumbent president, Teddy Roosevelt, had invited Booker T. Washington to the White House. And there was a firestorm of controversy just about having that the president had lunch at the White House with an African-American. And here there was going to be an African-American who lived in the White House. And he was pointing out that no matter who you supported, that was a really big and exciting moment for the country.
America today is a world away from the cruel and prideful bigotry of that time. There is no better evidence of this than the election of an African-American to the presidency of the United States. Let there be no reason now. Let there be no reason now for any American to fail to cherish their citizenship in this, the greatest nation on earth.
John McCain there, keeping it classy in 08 during his concession speech. Brady, it reminds me, did you see that movie, the Netflix documentary Mitt, that followed Mitt Romney on his campaign for president?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay, because there's a moment in there where they're at his hotel room and he's surrounded by his family, and it strikes him that he's not even thought. He so thought he was going to win that he didn't even consider writing a concession speech. Let's listen to a clip from that.
So what do you say if we – what do you think you say in a concession speech? Here at Suits, thank you. Just called President Obama to congratulate him on his victory. His supporters and his campaign also deserve congratulations. I wish all of them well, particularly the President, the First Lady, and their daughters. This is a time of great challenges for America, and I pray that the President will be successful in guiding the nation. Helen's listening.
I was following.
You know, everybody just looks dazed and blank, which I guess on some level could bring that kind of idea of thinking like a winner, you know, so positively that you don't even consider that you might lose.
Yeah, if you're spending time writing the speech about what happens when you lose, you're not spending time trying to win the election. I mean, everybody thought that Harry Truman in 1948 was behind in his bid for re-election against the Republican candidate, the governor of New York, Thomas Dewey. But Truman said, I'm getting to work. I'm not conceding a single vote. I'm not writing a concession speech. And he ended up winning. There was that famous moment where he got off the train in Chicago and he held up the famously wrong headline of the Tribune that said Dewey defeats Truman. He figures, well, I don't have time to write a concession speech.
OK, so after the concession speech, you're just a loser walking among us. And I hate to say it like that, but in politics, you have winners and losers. How about happy losers? Anybody really benefit from not becoming president?
Some candidates have actually walked away from the process and found a whole new life after politics that they've wound up enjoying more. The classic example that comes to mind for me is William Howard Taft. He ran for re-election against his former mentor, friend, and former president, Theodore Roosevelt, and the Democrat Woodrow Wilson. Wilson wound up winning the election. And Taft, of those three candidates, finished a distant third. And he joked not long after the election, he says, I've been elected ex-president by the largest margin in history. And he actually found that being outside of politics agreed with him very much. His health improved. He lost a lot of weight. He spent a lot of time teaching at law schools. Then he ended up getting the job that he really always wanted instead of the presidency. He wound up being Chief Justice of the United States. So he wound up enjoying himself very much. He even reconciled with Teddy Roosevelt in time.
Teddy Roosevelt, however, not such a graceful loser.
Not particularly. Not when a man says things like, we stand at Armageddon and we battle for the Lord. You don't give up that easily.
Any other beautiful losers?
John Quincy Adams had a very difficult presidency. John Quincy Adams won the White House in a very contested election over Andrew Jackson, who then vowed that the election had been stolen and that he would spend every waking moment trying to ruin Adams' presidency, which he did. Adams lost the rematch to Jackson, but he very quickly found a new niche as a member of Congress from Massachusetts. He wound up being kind of an early anti-slavery voice in the country. He was, by virtue of being a former president, able to say things that a lot of other politicians couldn't say. So there was a gag rule that they refused. At that time, the House had refused to even consider any bills about slavery. Adams got that lifted. He was the lawyer in the Supreme Court case, in the Amistad case, where the escaped slaves wound up winning their freedom, and wound up becoming a very esteemed figure who wound up loving the combat, so to speak, of politics at that level, instead of being somewhat out of it, isolated in the White House.
Well, you know, when we talk about partisanship in American politics, a lot of people go back to the election of 1876. Now, Brady, maybe it's too soon to really dig into this one.
Well, this one makes the 1876 election made the Bush v. Gore contest in 2000 look very mild-mannered. There was talk at some point that we might have a second civil war because the election got so crazy. There was vote rigging and stealing and all kinds of nefarious activity going on between the Republican candidate Rutherford B. Hayes and the Democrat Samuel Tilden. In the end, Rutherford B. Hayes wound up winning, and that's why we remember his beard and we remember nothing about Samuel Tilden. Even though Tilden won the popular vote, Tilden liked to joke later on that he had the benefit of having won the presidency without ever having to have the responsibilities of serving. But there is a slight bitter note, because his grave in New York State has a very pointed epitaph that says, "I still trust the people."
Brady Carlson, NHPR's All Things Considered host. He's currently on deadline to deliver his forthcoming book. It is called Dead Presidents, an American Adventure. It just hasn't been published yet. We have a list of our memorable winners, losers, and concession speeches at wordofmouthradio.org. Thank you so much for listening today. If you missed any segment, or if you'd like to share something with a friend, you can download the Word of Mouth podcast from iTunes. It's also available at wordofmouthradio.org or on the NHPR app. You can also get in touch with us or share your ideas for the program on facebook.com/wordofmouthradio, on Twitter @wordofmouth, or on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. We find the best ideas move around by word of mouth, so let us hear yours. I'm Virginia Prescott. Until next time, this is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio.
And it's hanging from a pigeon wing. But get right if you can't relate. Trade the cash for the beef, for the body, for the hate. And my time is a piece of wax falling on a termite who's choking on the splinters.